Make sure we're really recording this time. Good evening. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to episode 81 of the Weekly Wind Down. I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacy, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacy, the political princess.
And I'm Jeannie Levick, an author with Bullstroke Books.
And we wanted to thank Jeannie for joining us on this Christmas week. I went to send the outline yesterday and I was like, oh, I still have like 3 days to send it. And I was like, oh, no, I don't. Christmas is like this black hole in a calendar for me that is, I'm like, oh, they're actual days of the week. Like it was a Monday and a Tuesday, not just Christmas.
I had to go to work yesterday. Like,
oh my God.
I know. Wow. I know, it's terrible. Everybody's like, what day is it? I'm like, it's Wednesday. Wednesday at 8:05 a.m.
Okay, you were not at work at 8:05.
I was not.
No, okay. I was going to say.
8:35.
Ish. Yeah, there's a big ish. I worked with Stacy. Everything was ish. Yeah. You're always on time for meetings, but showing up for work was ish. But you always leave like 2 or 3 hours late. So there is that. Yeah. Okay. So we are going to, before anyone skips forward, we're not going to talk about politics tonight. You're welcome. We know the government shut down. No, we know. But we're going to talk about Christmas. But first, we're going to talk about Jeannie and her newest book release.
The Democratic Party won't pay us under the table for doing this podcast while the government shut down. That doesn't even make sense.
So why would we talk about it, right?
Right. We're not being paid off. So
no.
We're going to have to skip a week. So, you know, open CNN. Check your Facebook feed, whatever it is you do to get, or, you know, wait for us next week and we'll do our best to catch up. So Jeannie, why don't you tell us about your latest release?
Are we not going to do the wine
introduction? Oh, shoot. I totally, it's like we took a week. I'm telling you, I have a black space. I have a black space from Christmas. I know. It's like, I've never heard it. You think after what, 100 hours of us doing this? All right. So I am actually not drinking wine tonight. My sister is visiting. My sister and her girlfriend are visiting. And we went up to a local brewery called Trogues. And I picked up beer from there. And it's Nugget Nectar. And it's really good. I knew I would like it because I drank it there. So
are they better at making wine in Pennsylvania or beer in Pennsylvania than they are?
They are 100% better at making beer. But I mean, that bar for like being better than making their wine here is real low, real low. So yeah, but no, Trogues makes really good beer. Stacy has been there with me. It's good stuff. So, I like it now. I'm going to like it at the end. There's not going to be any surprises here.
Stacy, I am drinking a wine that I got from my shipment of, I got 15 bottles from Splash Wines for $71 with shipping, which I'm really excited about because they come from all over the place. This one is called Placer Andoulas. Probably said that wrong. It's a Tempranillo.
What makes you think
Syrah.
That? You
probably said that wrong.
I think you got Syrah right.
But it's a Syrah, so it's really sweet, which is not really my thing. But I got a double, so I'm going to give the other one to my dad. And when he says, hey, is this any good? I can at least say, yeah, I've tried it before. So that's the only reason I'm drinking that one.
I did see you screwing off the cap before we started recording, so you know it's a good one.
Yeah. Free cap.
That is so funny. So I got this one. Did you drink this already, Stacy? It's the Menatois Lavish.
I thought so when you sent me like the label, but I realized it was Luscious that I had.
Oh, okay, because I got it and it didn't look like what you had before. And then I started reading the description and I was like, I think this is it. Okay, I have to read this one because it's funny.
Of course.
So it's a Merlot. It says, first of all, it's not a description. It's their wine confession.
Yes. I'm here for this.
Right. We vow to make a grand impression. We'll seduce your senses with a voluptuous Merlot like no other. You'll be wooed by the way our ripe blueberries and juicy black plums flirt endlessly with dark cocoa, while the thrill of vanilla in our smooth, chocolatey finish gives you a plush, sensual tasting experience that's pure luxury. Let us astonish you with the lavish life.
I feel like this is like 50 Shades of Grey for like repressed.
That's how mine was. The luscious or whatever. Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Like, our ripe blueberries. Like,
what is blueberry like a cinnamon? Yeah.
You know, if I'd known that wine could do all those things for you, I probably would drink wine.
See? What I think is funny is whenever Stacey's about to read the back of her bottle, she leans into her mic as if we can't hear her from a foot away. Yeah. Like you're giving some type of presentation. Do you have a PowerPoint prepared for us? Or like...
Sounds sultry.
Yeah, my luscious blueberries.
Exactly. You can't just blurt that out.
I don't want to see your blueberries. Keep your blueberries to yourself. Jeannie, how are you going to follow that up?
I am drinking peppermint hot cocoa from Trader Joe's. And there's nothing sultry about it. There's nothing seductive about it. It's just very good hot cocoa. And I'm sure it had a label, but I didn't read it. So
just toss some blueberries in there. It can do wonders for you.
Yeah.
It would have hot cocoa. Didn't it have dark cocoa in it? Didn't you say dark
cocoa? It did. It had some kind of cocoa. Yeah.
Cocoa after birth.
It flirts endlessly with dark cocoa while the thrill of vanilla.
Oh, endlessly dark cocoa. Mine ends.
Something.
My editor would say, how does wine flirt with anything? She'd be like, take that out. That doesn't make sense. Yeah.
That's funny.
I have to say, though, like any wine by Ménage à Trois, I'm always a fan of. It's so good.
It is. Yeah.
It's really good. For the price point, it's really good.
Right. Yeah. For like a $9.99.
Oh, it's like $14 here, but whatever.
Because it's imported in Pennsylvania.
Every wine should be imported in Pennsylvania. It's disgusting here. Sorry, people in Pennsylvania that like the wine.
You don't know any better.
Here's the thing. You don't like wine.
You like juice. Just drink wine cooler. Stop fucking around. Yeah. Your beer is excellent, but stop trying to make wine happen. It's not happening. Okay, now we can talk about Jeannie's new book.
Okay. It's called A Wish Upon a Star. It came out this month, at the beginning of this month. And it is about a woman who moves home to her childhood home after a particularly hurtful breakup that involved the loss of a little boy who she was in his life since birth. And it was like losing her son. And so she moves home to heal and to get over it, and immediately finds herself living next door to a beautiful woman with a 7-year-old daughter who is autistic. And they connect immediately. She and the little girl, Sienna, connect immediately, and the story just opens. That's where the story opens. And it is a traditional romance, so it goes from there with, you know, some predictability, but it also has a lot of
blueberries.
A lot of blueberries. It has a lot of interaction with Sienna. That is, according to a lot of the early reviews, she pretty much steals the show. She and this little dog named Gus. So that's the crux of it, and it seems to be doing pretty well. People like it. So
nice. How was it writing an autistic child? Was it challenging for you, or?
You know, interestingly, it wasn't. I did a little bit of research before I started, and kind of, you know, got some basics combined with some, you know, general things that I already knew just from life. And then I just went on instinct, and I got to the fourth or fifth chapter, and I started getting nervous about that. And I thought, what if I'm doing this all wrong? Because I was just kind of trusting what came through as I was writing Sienna. And I'm a member of the Lesbian Review Book Club on Facebook. It's a group on Facebook. And the administrator, the founder of the group, Sheena, every once in a while, it's a readers group, and authors are welcome to be in the group, but there's no self-promotion and all that. But every once in a while, Sheena will open it up to the authors to talk about what they're working on and to promote what they want to promote. And so I posted something that I was writing a book and gave the basics of it. And one of the readers on the group, she she's commented on it, and she said, I really am looking forward to that because my daughter is autistic. And I commented back, and I said, oh, I need to talk to you then.
That's yeah. nice.
And so I asked her if she would be a sensitivity beta reader for me. And she was happy to do it. And so I sent her what I'd written. And she told me, she said, you have nailed this. You've just really nailed it. This is exactly what it's like, both in terms of dealing with the autism and, she said, the feelings that the mother's name is Erica, the feelings that Erica has about it and the isolation that she feels from having it, you know, that a lot of parents feel from having autistic children because it requires so much of their time and attention. And so, you know, and then she was kind enough to work with me through the rest of the book. And so in that, and then I felt really solid because I just ran all the scenes. Well, I just let her read the whole book as I was writing it. And she gave me some really good feedback on it and, you know, clarified and corrected me on a couple of scenes that needed to be reworked. And so it was really, it didn't feel like a challenge other than that little bit of insecurity I had when I reached the point that it was starting to make me nervous if I was doing it correctly. Because I really wanted to make Sienna authentic. I wanted her to come across, I wanted her to be a full-blown character, not just, you know, there's so many places I feel like autistic characters and autistic people they're presented as stereotypes.
Yeah.
And you don't get a real feel for who they are as a person or as a character. And I didn't want to do that in this book. And so I'm really grateful. The reader's name is Victoria Thomas, and I'm really grateful to her for that, for everything that she contributed.
Did you find you had any misconceptions about people with autism that changed over the course of you writing the story?
Think about that.
I think the fact that you were able to see that, like, that's just a part of who someone is and not entirely who they are. I think you probably already had a pretty good understanding of, like,
yeah,
you know, the fact that you could just sort of know that, like, just trust your gut. It's a person, and that, you know, sort of having autism mm-hmm. is just one of the things about them.
And that's pretty accurate. And that's kind of accurate in my writing in general. I'll start writing a character and I'll write things that I don't have any way of knowing. And then I find out later, you know, somebody says, oh, wow, that's exactly what it's like. So I come across that just in general when I trust my gut on a character. And I'd had a harder time trusting it with Sienna because it was really important to me to present her the way I discussed just a few minutes ago. So I don't know that I had any misconceptions. I had a couple misconceptions about Erica's side of it, like what it's like to be a parent. That, you know, it really opened my heart and gave me a lot of empathy to the parents of autistic children and just how difficult that is to have a child that you can't just scoop up and hug and that may never say, I love you. You know, we yeah. as parents yeah. of neurotypical children, we take that for granted. You know, that my child will run in and hug me and say, I love you, mommy, and run back outside, you know? Yeah. And so I learned a lot. I probably learned more about being what it's like for the parents than what it's like, you know, to actually be autistic.
Right.
And a lot of the quirks that Sienna has in the book too, actually are quirks I have. Like there's a point in the book where she has an issue with Wendy's hamburgers that I don't know if you've eaten at Wendy's, but the burger patties are square and they're on round buns. And that always is just, it just bugs me. And I don't eat at Wendy's because of that. And so I threw that into the book and, you know, lo and behold, a couple of people said, oh my God, that's so accurate.
We rent a space out in the rec building that I'm in with a special needs group that they serve an adult population. So it can be, and they're not, these are all individuals who the whole point of the program is to give them skills that they can eventually move out of their parents' house and kind of live on their own. So they're, you know, the severity isn't as extreme as it can be in some cases, but the director of the program, who we've actually had on this podcast, Erin, mm-hmm. she kind of blew my mind one day because she said, everyone's a little autistic. You just cope with it better than other people can. Everyone has those things that when you see them or hear them, it's hard for you to handle or deal with, or you're just like, I can't with that. Mm-hmm. And right. She goes, that's what it feels like for them, but multiply it by a million and right. take away your coping capability and your ability to articulate how you feel. And that's what it feels like all the time. And I was like, oh God, that would be, I never heard it that way before. Like we're all right. a little bit, you're able to process it and deal with it differently than these people are. So I was kind of like, oh my God, that would be like, find the thing you find most, not annoying, I don't want to say, but you're just like, no, for whatever reason.
Stronger than annoying. I mean, most yeah. overwhelming.
Yeah.
Right. The
yeah,
thing that overwhelms you. Everything. Yeah. Yeah.
Show Atypical, is that where I found
love
out about
Atypical
it?
Yes. Actually, I did learn a lot before I even started this book. I got hooked on the first season of Atypical, and I learned a lot from watching Sam. He's a lot older yeah. than Sienna, deals with different things, but yeah, I learned a lot from that show, and I love that show. I just, especially the first
Me
season
too. Right
the season I care for quite as much mm-hmm. but the first season I just loved it.
Well, and, he does a great job too.
Oh my gosh. And I think it's so relatable. Like the whole family dynamic is so relatable just on a human level. And, mm-hmm. you know, right. a poor dad trying as hard as he can, and he's constantly using the wrong terms. Uh-huh. That I think would be, you know, would be so challenging.
Well, and yeah. Sienna's dad is in the book, and I got some tips from watching the dad on Atypical mm-hmm. and Sienna's dad in the book. He has trouble. He's never been able to really figure out how to relate mm-hmm. with Sienna, and it, you know, it's caused trouble for him as well. And so, you know, that show did, it helped me a lot in just kind of watching their family dynamic. And, mm-hmm. and I, you know, I probably learned more from watching that than anything else. And I did that before I started writing the book. Mm-hmm. And so back to your question, did I have any misconceptions that were cleared up? I probably didn't because of that show. Because they do such a good job of not only showing Sam and what he deals with on a daily basis, but also what the rest of the family deals with also. And yeah. so that is a very good show.
Yeah. I like Atypical a lot better than The Good Doctor.
Me
Have you
too.
Seen that one?
I haven't seen that one. That one really didn't. I don't watch a lot of TV, and so I'm fairly particular about what I do watch. And so
The kid is just not as good an actor at portraying autism, I think. He's mm-hmm. he's very robot-like, and I feel like that's just not the mm-hmm. same.
Well, and see, that's an example of what I was talking about. I didn't want to portray Sienna that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you see a lot of characters in, you know, in books and TV and movies that are portrayed that way, that there's not enough humanity to them.
Exactly.
You know, it's just a stereotype. Or, you know, almost a caricature of what, you know, they take a few basic things. And the one thing I did learn, let me rephrase my question, or the answer to your question, Jackie, earlier. What I did learn that I was not as aware of before I wrote the book is that, you know, I always thought that there was a lot of commonality in people with autism, and there really isn't. There's a couple of things that a lot of autistic people deal with, but they're like any other people. I mean, they have things, they're very individual, even in terms of what they deal with and how they deal with it and their, you know, their coping mechanisms, and, you know, what works for one might not work for a million others. And so that is something I learned that did surprise me, because, you know, I was like everybody else. I don't have any autistic people in my life. And so that did surprise me to find that. And then I was actually grateful, because it that's the other thing that lifted my tension about writing Sienna. Because I thought, if that's true, then, you know, I can pretty much just go with my gut. Mm-hmm. And then I had Victoria as a sounding board, and as somebody who I knew was going to, if I did get off track, she'd call me back in. So. It was really a joy to write the book. I had a lot of fun writing this book.
I can't wait to read it.
It was fun.
I'm really excited.
A lot of people who have read it say that, you know, they just really had a good time reading it. So
Well, all your books are really good, so I'm sure this one is too.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you and I share an award on the one. So
I know. Oh, well, and Carson, too. We had her on last time, and I forgot about it. Yeah.
I thought, oh, there's the three 2018 Romantic Suspense Goldie winners.
Right, I know. Hey, at least it was all Bold Strokes.
I know. I was surprised about that.
Clean sweep.
Somebody told me at some point that GCLS never does that, and they never, give all three awards to the same publishing house. And I thought, well, that's really not fair because, if those are the top books, they should get them. So I was pleased to see that because it.
Well, they were all clarified. Good books.
Yeah. Clearly. Award winning.
We did have a question. We had a few questions, but the first one is from Kara. Kara, I'm actually not sure how she pronounces it. It says, what is your writing kryptonite? In other words, what prevents you from writing a new story or continuing one you've already started?
That could be absolutely anything.
Blueberries.
Dark chocolate, I probably the clearest answer and the most deeply honest answer I can give to that is fear that I'm not doing it correctly. Fear that in the writing of it, I'm missing some really significant piece. Because I view writing as channeling, and not in the sense that you go into a trance and, not in that sense. But I believe that writers, whether they know it or not, if you have a gift for writing, you are operating as a channel because, a lot of people think that I'll speak for myself. A lot of people think that I make up my own stories. And I suppose I could say that, but it doesn't ever feel like that. To me, writing feels like something is downloaded into me and it's my job to write it. And I attribute what I talked about how characters come to me and how I just trust my gut on them, and they almost always turn out to be correct, whether or not I have any experience with them. And that is a part of what I'm talking about. I wrote Embracing the Dawn, and one of the characters,
oh my god, that's one of my favorite, that book is so good. Okay, well, that's one of my favorite books.
I don't have any experience with being an ex-convict. I Jinx is based on a woman I talked to online for a while, loosely based, and so I have a little bit of her story as part of Jinx's story, and then some of the things that she shared with me. But there's a lot in that book that comes through in Jinx and about Jinx and even her background, even before she went to prison. A lot of that stuff, it came through as I was typing, and I just typed it. And so to answer Kara's question, that can really stop me if all of a sudden I lose focus on what my job is, and I start questioning, am I doing this right? Am I portraying this character accurately? And that can stop me cold.
I've told that to people before too, and they've asked, like, you'd sound crazy to most people, but, and again, I can only speak for myself, but your characters almost, they kind of come to you and they start talking to you. So it's actually voices in your head, but it's not, because you understand intellectually that their character is talking to you. You're not hallucinating them, but they start kind of telling you their story. And that's kind of how it starts. And sometimes they change their minds. Mm-hmm. So maybe, I don't know, maybe writers are a little crazy.
I hear them inaccurately the first time and they've got to tap, or I start as a writer, quote unquote, start trying to take over the story and make it go a certain way. And my characters will tell me, that's not what we're doing here. And they'll tell me by just cutting everything off. And then it's like, it's almost like they're saying, okay, you think you can do a better job? Go ahead. And I sit there for a couple of weeks and say, okay.
I cannot. Okay. Come back, please.
We're on a deadline here. Let's get this thing going.
Stace, you want to take the next one?
Yeah. So on the same lines about characters, Your fan Myra asks, do you have crushes on any of your characters, and are they based on anyone you've had relationships or a crush on?
The first part of the question is yes, I have crushes on a number of my characters.
You have Jinx. You have to a little bit. Like,
especially if you're writing romance.
You can't expect other people to like them if you don't.
Exactly. I have a huge crush on Jinx from Embracing the Dawn.
Everyone does. Rest
of the World, yes. In my first book, Threads of the Heart, there's a character named Dusty, who I would run off with in a heartbeat. I'd be so gone. You know, goodbye to the dog, goodbye to the kids, the grandkids, everybody. She actually is still probably my favorite character. And so I have a crush on her. I have a crush on Leslie and Erica both, actually, from A Wish Upon a Star for different reasons. They're different. They're very different from one another in some ways and very similar in others. So I have a crush on both of those characters. And even in Into Thin Air, the character Jordan, and I don't know that that's so much of a crush as it is, I am deeply moved by Jordan. She's a very flawed character, and I don't know, my heart just goes out to her. So I don't know if that's actually a crush or just a very strong emotional connection with her. So yeah, I agree with you, Jackie. I think in order to write a full-blown character who really steps off the page, you have to have an emotional connection with them.
Yeah, you know, and to write something flirty, you would have to think about what you would see as flirty and how you would react to that.
Exactly. And
add that in there too.
Mm-hmm. Think about blueberries. Oh. They're flirty. I read that somewhere. I'm ready to write a book.
Well, I think when you write romance, especially, like, there's a little piece in all the main characters that you've had crushes on in other people. Mm-hmm. Like, it's there. And I think
that you find,
right, because I think crush is kind of like, you can have crushes too that aren't romantic. Like, you can have a crush on somebody because you admire them and just enjoy being around them, but not necessarily want to like make out with it. You know what I mean? Like, crush is such like a, it's so up for interpretation. But I think if you really want people to like your characters, you have to like them too. Like, it's impossible for that to come across. And readers will know when you have, because they'll say the chemistry fell flat between these two. And it's like, well, yeah, I didn't really like them either.
Well, that's what I make sure I really like the characters, because I have a lot of story ideas that come through. And I make sure the ones I write are the ones that I really connect with the characters for that very reason. Because otherwise you're going to spend all this time, months writing and editing and putting a book out there just to have people tell you something you already knew that you didn't, you know, there isn't anything there. There's no emotional base to the story. Well,
and I would assume that you have to force. Mm-hmm. It's not going to just come out of you, you know, organically. I feel like you have to try and force that one.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, Gina wants to know if you read your book reviews and how you handle the bad ones.
I am getting to the point that I don't read the bad ones, because that's another thing that will stop me in my tracks. When I was writing Into Thin Air, that was a very difficult book for me to write because of the subject matter. It deals, I don't want to give it away, but it was a very difficult, emotionally difficult book for me to write, and I was fried when I was done. And I was trying to write it right at the same time that my debut novel, Threads of the Heart, was coming out. And that book, both of those books actually, Threads of the Heart and Into Thin Air, people either love them or they hate them.
Yeah.
Literally hate them. And so Threads of the Heart, that was my very first experience with reviews. And there are some really harsh ones. And for the same reason,
people think they're freaking Ebert. Like, first of all, if you're going to give me a bad review, make sure that your grammar's correct. Exactly. Exactly. I'll take you more seriously.
You know, if you get a free copy of the book, then I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, it seems got to be hard not to take those things personally, but at the same time, like, I don't really love horror movies. I don't know that I would go and watch a horror movie and then like give it a bad review. Like, not everything for everybody. Yeah,
exactly. There's that component to negative reviews, and those are the ones I really like. And if a review starts out, well, I don't normally read romance, but you know, I read this one, and then they give it a 2. I'm not going to put a lot of stock in that. If you can, if a negative review says, I don't think this book works because there's no chemistry between the characters, or, and even if I don't, you know, even if they didn't feel any chemistry between the characters, or if it can say that the pacing was off, or, you know, you want to give me that kind of criticism,
right.
I'll take it and I'll pay attention to it. But, you know, there's one of my books, I don't know which one, one of them recently, there was a 2-star review on it, and the entire review, it was 2 stars, and it just says, not my thing. And it's like,
that doesn't make the book bad.
Right. I got a 2-star review for Pursuit, and the reviewer was like, this was really well written. I really liked the author. I enjoyed the characters, but I don't like military novels. And I was like, then don't fucking read it, you asshole, or don't review it. Like, your 2-star review, people decide, people don't have a lot of time. So when they base what book they're going to read, if they see something with, you know, 3 stars, they're going to pick up something with 4 or 5 stars. It's just like, why do you do that to us? Why do you do that to us?
Well, and sometimes I feel like some of the talented reviewers. Let me start by saying
there
that.
Are. Yeah.
And some of the reviewers that post reviews, sometimes it feels like they forget that there's a human being on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, there are some people who can crank out a book in 6-8 weeks. That isn't me.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me months to write a book, and then another few months to get through the editing. And my heart and soul goes into a book. Mm-hmm. And it's hurtful, you know, when somebody, the book Thread to the Heart, that got, the people who really don't like that book, they don't like it. There's 3 storylines in that book. It's not a traditional romance. And that's the other thing. I think that people who do write reviews need to take the time to understand what they're reviewing. Because if you take a general fiction book, a general lesbian fiction, and review it as a romance novel, it's not a valid review.
Mm-hmm.
Because the romance genre fiction has... they all have rules to them,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, most writers follow. I step out of the lines every once in a while, but, you know, for the most part,
you have to meet certain benchmarks.
There are certain benchmarks, and there are certain things that, you know, you're not even going to get past your editor.
Mm-hmm.
If you do them. And so first of all, Threads of the Heart isn't a romance novel, and it's a general lesbian fiction. It has 3 storylines in it. All of them are romantic storylines, and it follows 3 couples that 5 of the women room together in the same house, and
Jesus.
Those are the main characters. Yes, I know.
God, sounds like the Navy.
It follows 3 different relationships. One of them is a woman who's just coming out. She's just realized she's a lesbian, and, you know, coming to terms with that, and she's, you know, she's been married and has a couple kids, so she's working that through. And then 2 of the women have lived in the same house just as roommates and friends for 3 years, and then they're developing something more. And then the 3rd couple is the couple who owns the house, and they've been together for 13 years. And there's an infidelity storyline there, because I wanted to show different stages of, you know, things that happen in different stages of relationships. And I wanted to show a different way of dealing with certain things. And so the book is exactly what I meant it to be. So, good or bad reviews, I am proud of the book, and it did and it said exactly what I set out to do and say. But when the reviews were coming in for that book, and there were a lot of people that were mad, really mad, about the infidelity storyline.
But that happens in real life.
It does.
I mean, that's just...
And that's what I wanted to show.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to destroy a relationship.
Oh, good people can make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Addison character in this. And, you know, she's not a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
But the reviews were coming in from that, and it was getting, particularly the early reviews, it was getting hit pretty hard. And at the same time, those were coming in, I'm writing Into Thin Air, which the Jordan character in Into Thin Air, the title comes from the fact that she just disappears into thin air one day. And her girlfriend and her best friend are left to try to find her and where'd she go, and you as the reader find out where she is the whole time she's missing, but they don't know, but they find out that they did not know her at all,
mm-hmm,
before she went missing. And so in their search for her, they find out that her girlfriend finds out that, you know, she's been cheating on her the whole time they were together. And so I'm trying to write Jordan, who makes Addison in Threads of the Heart look like a fairy princess in terms of that aspect of her personality. And the reviews really got in the way of that. I kept, you know, that doubt of, am I writing this character correctly? And is this, well, you know, should I do that? Because as an author, I want to write genuinely what comes through me. What the story I'm supposed to be writing, what the story that the characters tell me. And what happens if I pay too much attention to negative reviews is I lose my confidence in that. And I think, well, maybe I should just write what will make everybody happy, which now I've learned. I'm on my sixth book and I've learned you're never going to write anything that makes everybody happy.
Yeah.
But, you know, back then I thought I could.
It's so funny because listening to this, it's so true about life, though. You know what I mean? Like, not just writing books, I'm listening to you and I'm like, so many people, especially with social media and stuff, you totally live your life with people feeling like they can just openly review it.
Yeah.
Not your book, your whole life. And so it really does inform the decisions that you make based on, you know, other people's opinions of how you're doing stuff. And it just, mm-hmm, that seems so wrong.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, reviews, good reviews sell books, you know, yeah, and bad reviews hinder the sales. And so there's that reality to it. And at the same time, from the writing perspective, if you do read the bad reviews, at least me, again, I'll speak for me. If I read the bad reviews, it can stop me dead in my tracks. It can make me, you know, afraid to write, because I don't write easy stories. It doesn't seem to be. Those aren't the characters that come to me.
Well, and you're totally right that I wish the reviewers would understand the book they're getting into. Like, I got beat up on Rise of the Resistance from two straight men, by the way. Hey, read the synopsis before you pick it up, you dum-dums. And they were like, oh, you know, this is supposed to be a dystopian novel, but it didn't spend enough on world building. And I'm like, yeah, because it's actually a romance, not like it's not a I'm not writing Star Wars. Like, when this isn't. I'm not spending 60,000 words on talking about like the technobabble of a futuristic world. Like, the romance novels focus on characters. Well, they, mm-hmm, focus on characters. They don't focus on stuff like that. If you want one of those, pick up another book. And I'm not going to say who their real name's on there, but Bob and Jim. Like, stay in your lane. God.
I don't know if readers in, you know, I don't know if there are a lot of readers who don't understand that, you know, that there are very specific guidelines for different genres. And like in a romance novel, if you're reading a romance, the romance is the main plot. Anything else that's going on, that's why it was interesting to venture out into romantic suspense.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a little more leeway in that.
Yeah.
Like, I never would have gotten away with writing Jordan in a traditional romance, you know. But in a romantic suspense, her story, that book has actually two storylines that are taking place side by side. And you don't even see all three main characters together until the very last chapter. And so it really is. In fact, some of the negative reviews I got on that one had to do with, you know, they liked the romance, but what Jordan was experiencing was just too much for them. And then, you know, I finally made peace with that. And I thought, okay, because, you know, what she went through was pretty traumatic. But then there was another negative review that I came across right about the time I got okay with, you know, I made my peace with the other ones. I got one that said, well, I, you know, you can read a romance like that in any romance novel, but I would have really liked to have seen Jordan's story fleshed out more. And that's when I thought, okay, you're not going to win here.
You're not going to win. My wife takes my bad reviews way more personal than I do. She's always like, who the fuck does he think he is? Like, bet, 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 bet. Like, and I'm like, calm down. That. Yeah, she gets real worked up. Our last question is from Sarah, and she says, what's your theory on writing villains? The meaner / worse the better, or do they have to have redeeming qualities? I just want to give a shout out to the people who actually send these in. You guys send good questions.
Yeah, that's
really good question. In my books, you won't find, let me make sure this is true. In my books, you won't find completely bad or completely good characters.
People aren't completely bad or completely good.
People aren't completely bad or completely good. So, you know, in my books, villains, like there are a lot of people that would probably consider Jordan a villain. You know, she's not a villain, like, you know, she's not hunting you down and trying to kill you. But, you know, she does some things that are very hurtful. But in my books, I will always explain why somebody does what they do. You know, you get a lot of in-depth backstory. And there are a lot of people that they love Into Thin Air because of Jordan. A lot of them said, you know, I hated her at the beginning of the book, but, you know, by the time the book was over, my heart really went out to her and I really understood her. And so, you know, now I doubt very much I'll ever write a thriller where, you know, you will have a character that is considered a true villain. And, you know, if I were writing a thriller, you probably wouldn't get to know enough about the villain to know their backstory. But, you know, they would still have one because, you know, people are people. You know, we all have good, we all have bad. I have things in my past that I'm not proud of that hurt people. And I have people in my life who have done things to either, you know, that I found hurtful or, you know, I know they've hurt other people. So, you know, we're all walking this path together and we're all here to learn from each other. And forgiveness is a big part of it. And that's another theme you'll find in my books is forgiveness.
I'm experiencing something really different with my latest book, Rise of the Resistance, because I typically write in my books, they're military, they're serial killer. Like the bad guy is the bad guy. Like he's the worst. But it's easy because they're terrorists and they're serial killers. But in my newest book, I have gotten probably over 10 emails asking to turn one of the villains, someone named Nora, I have gotten such an overwhelming response to turn Nora into the final like romantic arc of the Phoenix series to bring her in like over into the resistance and turn her into a good guy. This one woman has emailed me 3 times asking about it. And I'm like, I'm writing 2 other books right now. I'll get to you. But yeah, it's the first time I've had it.
Yeah. I've had a number of people ask me to write a sequel to Into Thin Air that shows Jordan's recovery.
Yeah, it's weird what they want to see. I'm like, you want to see Nora like become a good guy? And they do. They yeah. really do, because she has enough redeeming. They think she was a victim of her circumstances, yeah. and they want to see her be like convert. Well, she's read it. Yeah, uh-huh. they want to see her. She was actually the first one to say, "What are we doing with Nora?" I think she's good. Well, first you wanted to kill her.
I said, if you're not going to flesh out any of the redeeming qualities, then I think that's what you have to do. But I think we just don't want to see another female character with redeeming qualities fall victim to like manipulative men.
Right. She was a product of a total patriarchal society right. and turned her into who she is. So yeah, so I was like, huh, maybe I will make the final one like Nora finally, like, I don't know, becomes a good guy. I don't know, I haven't just uh-huh. I can't, like,
that
I said
would be a really, that would be really interesting. That would be a really interesting twist to take somebody that, you know, has been the villain mm-hmm. in other books and turn them into the heroine. And yeah, I think you should do that. I agree.
Sure, it's on my list. Put it on my list. Because I thought it was a good idea to write two books at the same time I have a newborn.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Braver than me. I'm having trouble getting my work in progress finished right now, and it's only one.
Well, one of them I'm actually writing with Jean Copeland. So, like, I write two chapters and then I don't see it for 3 weeks because she's writing two chapters. Oh. So that's a little bit easy. And then the second one I'm writing is the final installment to the After Dark series. So I've known these characters for so long that it's just, but then because it's the final one in the series, you're like, you have to make people really
don't mess it up.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure. Yeah, especially because Tyler's really near and dear to so many people's hearts. Like, she's, yeah. people are a big fan of Tyler. They're not such a big fan of Brooke, which surprises me, but they're a big fan of Tyler. Boring.
Need as many fans.
Huh. So, Stacey, did you want to go over your Christmas questions? Or did you guys have any other questions for Jeannie?
Can I say one more thing about the review question?
Absolutely.
Because I don't want to leave it on the focus being so much on the negative reviews, because there are a lot of amazing readers and a lot of amazing reviewers that have blog sites and, you know, that just do a fabulous job bringing out, I'm speaking for the lesfic community because that's what I operate in, but, you know, in any reading community, I'm sure this is true for. But, you know, the reviewers that write thoughtful, and by thoughtful, I don't mean kind specifically. I mean reviews that they do put a lot of thought into, that actually explore the characters, that actually explore the plot and the pacing and all that stuff. And even the ones that, you know, write a short review that just say, this book really touched me and I recommend it. And I want to put out there that those reviews make a huge difference to not just for sales, but certainly for sales, but also to supporting writers that you love
mm-hmm.
and writers that you want to, you know, you want them to continue writing. You want to continue reading their books. And, you know, I can have a hellacious day, or I can get, you know, some negative reviews that I'm just really struggling with. And, you know, a single email from a reader or a single positive review that comes in that's just really thoughtful in that way, that I can tell the book really touched someone. You know, that's why I think writers write, is to make some kind of a difference in somebody's yeah. life.
Especially when you get the one review that you're like, oh my God, this person really got it. Like, they got yeah. what I was trying to do, and I yeah. didn't have to spell it out for them. Those really do make all the difference.
Or that verify that you did spell it out for them, mm-hmm. that you succeeded in that, because if it wasn't in those pages, they wouldn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes all the difference in the world. So I want to leave the review discussion on that note, because I do know a lot of very amazing reviewers.
For sure.
And I just am so thankful to all of them. So anyway, okay.
And if you really like a book, even if they're a bestseller, you should review it. And yeah. if yeah. even if you don't really like one, but you have constructive criticism, leave a review. Yeah.
Like I said, you know, if you're gonna actually review the book, and you know, like there was one review I got on, I don't remember which book it was, but the reviewer overall, you know, really liked the book, but she said she didn't think that the actual sex scene when it finally happened lived up to the chemistry between the characters. And I thought, okay, I can take that.
You were missing blueberries.
I was missing blueberries. What it is.
Flirty blueberries.
I'm going to need to remember to put blueberries in all my books from now.
I'm 100% putting it in my next one just for Stacey.
Shout out.
Shout out to Stacey. Stacey, you had some Christmas stuff you wanted to do?
I don't know if Stacey had some stuff she wanted to talk about, or if I'm just going to jump right into Christmas articles that I found.
Well, I have a Christmas thing, since we're not going to talk about how the government shut down. Because my family's a bunch of loudmouths, so it's kind of funny that I do this podcast, because my brother Tom actually like went to school for broadcasting and worked at a radio station for a while, and then my other brother Jeremiah has been on two podcasts. Not like once and then another time once. He had a sports one for a while, and now he's on this one called Keeping It Nerd. You guys should listen to it if you like nerdy things. Anyway, he was saying how their Christmas episode, they talked about what was the best gift they ever received at Christmas and the worst gift they ever received at Christmas. So I think we should do that.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyone want to start?
Are you talking about just this year?
No. Like your whole life. I mean, especially when you're a kid, when you have that like, oh my gosh, it's that thing I wanted. And then like, and oh my gosh, I don't like or want this thing. And you have to like pretend to be psyched about it because someone got it for you.
Oh.
Anybody?
I can go first. The best gift I ever got was Gizmo. Like, obviously, my dog. So, and I'm not even just saying that because Stacey's on the podcast. That's legit, like, the best gift I ever got was Gizmo. The worst one was probably, I spent two Christmases in Iraq, so those sucked because I didn't really get anything, but...
Weird.
I think anything from when I was a kid that my grandmother gave me, because she clearly just did not know me at all. She made a dictionary one year, which I was like, seven. Yeah. So
she knew you were going to grow up to be a writer.
Well, but yeah, the internet wasn't around yet. She didn't know about dictionary.com yet. But yeah, I think any bad Christmas present is someone who you feel like you're really close to and knows you, and then they give you something that you're like, you don't know me at all. Yeah. That, and it hurts your feelings because you're like, I don't actually care about the gift, but you clearly have not listened to me about anything exactly ever. So yeah, those are my best and worst.
Okay.
I don't know what my best is. Like, I think things from when I was a kid that, you know, you walk out on Christmas morning and you see things and you're just so excited. The year we got mountain bikes was probably like my biggest, like, oh my God moment, where we are totally taking this out and, you know, bye, Christmas is over. Here we go.
Yeah.
My worst, just like Jack said, my husband didn't really do the gifting thing for a few years.
When you got the washer and dryer, come on.
So for like 2 or 3 years, I didn't get anything for Christmas. And I mean, I got little stuff, like I got stuff from my parents and my kids made me presents and stuff, but he didn't get me anything. And I finally like voiced that, like, hey, that sucks. You know, like I go all out and like, I kind of expect something. And so he went out and the next year he bought a bunch of stuff that he thought I would like. And I didn't. And I had to be honest and tell him, like, I'm not a tennis bracelet girl at all. And I think, just like Jack said, like, my feelings were hurt. Like, don't you know me better than that, you know? Mm. And so I told him, and he returned it to get me something different. And the lady at the store was like, any girl that wouldn't want this is just crazy. And so he came home and he told me that. And I was like, that made it just so much worse. And I was like, I'm never asking you to return a gift again. Whatever you get me.
That's not crazy because you know what? I'm not a tennis bracelet kind of girl either, but I'd really like the new edition of Assassin's Creed for Xbox One. Right. Like, exactly. If you knew me, you'd know that.
Better on things that I'll use. And like, I was just trying to be honest because in my family, it's very be honest. I want you to have something that you like. If you don't like it, it doesn't hurt my feelings. Tell me and yeah. I will exchange it for what you really like. And so I was just trying to be honest and it came back in my face. So now I'm like, whatever gets me signed, it's great. it's okay.
So I'm gonna defend Kai for a second. He is a terrible gift giver, 100%. Like, he's the worst at gift giving. Like, no, he's bad. But he's an amazing human being. Like, I'm just going to, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So
you don't want to paint a bad picture of the sweet baby angel.
Right. But yeah. He's fantastic, like, the world. Person. If you were like, who's the world's worst gift giver, you'd be like, Kai Holiker. Like, he's fucking terrible. You wouldn't send Kai to get anything without, like, a real specific list, like, even yeah. I don't know, wine, like, he's just like he yeah, yeah no he's terrible yeah. at it.
That's funny.
Yeah. Like, bad.
What's yours, Stacey?
Right. Okay, let's see. It's funny because I feel like a lot of people pick their grandmas for some reason, but my grandma always gave really good gifts because she got us an ornament every year when we were
mine
younger
too,
like grown up. Which is funny because I know my friend Jessica, her grandma one year, I have to shout this one out because this was the worst gift ever. She got her a Betsy Johnson purse that looked like a pair of jeans.
What's like Betsy Johnson? Is Betsy Johnson a designer? Or is it like a caboodle?
No, Betsy Johnson. Yeah, kind of like kooky, like.
Like, oh, she's a
does cartwheels on the runway and like some of her stuff.
Like a Cyndi Lauper kind of thing?
Yes. Like Cyndi Lauper.
Okay.
But it was this pair of like it looked like vinyl plasticky 3D.
Is grandma smoking the ganja shopping online? Shorts. Like, what's
happening? It was so funny to watch her open that and go, oh, like she had to do one of those. But I remember one year, and I'll have to find a picture of it and send it to you guys. My grandma got me and my cousin matching outfits, and my cousin is a little bit more less than me, just like how I'm
like everyone, yeah.
Right. She's like very much more reserved, not like I'm better than her,
like
she's
normal, like, people like you're always dialed up to a 12, yeah,
at a normal level. And so I don't think she was feeling it quite as much as I did. Oh, but it was like a skirt. And it had like a little buckle on it that might have been shaped like a flower and like a silky blouse. And I put that thing on Christmas when I opened it and just posed every, like, no one was taking pictures, but I very, very clearly remember just like hitting poses.
I just want to say that literally no one is surprised by this story at all. Strong. Right.
So
like
That was the best.
That was the best. I remember that outfit being like
the worst for your sister.
Oh man. Excuse me. Like, I just felt so like, excuse my beauty, everyone. Like, because it felt like I was probably like 8 or 9 and it felt like a teenager outfit or like a sensible woman in her 20s, like fashionable, pretty flirty and thriving. Like, I felt like the bee's knees. I would say the worst gift I ever received. Okay, I big shocker. I'm the youngest and the only girl, so I definitely snooped every year at presents. And I remember this wasn't a bad gift. I just remember totally blowing it. My mom got me the Leonardo DiCaprio, Claire Danes, Romeo and Juliet movie.
Oh, that's a good
and
movie.
I remember I overcompensated so much acting surprised because I already knew what it was that I got in trouble for snooping. And then one year I got like a keyboard, which I had no interest in ever owning or wanting. So sorry, Santa. Didn't want that, never played it, and had to pretend like I was super juiced about it. But having that moment where you're like, I got Santa for rollerblades, and then there's rollerblades there. Like, that moment was the best.
Yeah.
Jeannie?
Okay. My turn.
Stacey should always go last. She's so fucking animated.
When you first said the question, what the first thing that popped into my mind, and I'd actually forgotten about this, but when I was a kid, this is for the what I'm going to say is the best, and it may not be the best. Well, it popped into my mind as the best, and I can still see it, so I'm going to say it. When I was a kid, Christmas morning one year, we came out into the living room, and under the tree with a huge red bow on it was a 5-man toboggan. Ooh. And I had never even seen one before, and it was from Santa. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a mountain community, and back then, now they don't get much snow, but back then we got 2 or 3 really solid snowstorms a winter, and the snow would melt off in the town, but it's like I said, it's a mountain community, so up the mountain the sledding slopes, they lasted a long time. And so I'm assuming my dad wanted the toboggan, which is why we got this. And you know, from that year on, every single year, every time it snowed, I mean, my brother and I, when it started snowing, we'd come racing home and just watch the snow until it got thick enough so that we knew the next day we were gonna head up the mountain and, you know, use this toboggan. And it was a family thing for years. And so I would say that was probably the best I ever got, because I loved tobogganing. And
that's what we're missing out on here in California.
Yeah.
Well, this was in California.
Oh, this, really?
It's a little, I grew up in a small town named Tehachapi that's about 45 minutes from Bakersfield here. And like I said, back then, now they don't get much snow, you know, with global warming and everything, which... Yeah. I know isn't happening, but it is here. And you know, Tehachapi, you know, they're lucky if they get one decent snowstorm a year now. And I remember 2 or 3 per winter, and that the snow really stayed on the ground for a long period of time. And so, you know, and that was my childhood. That's where I grew up. And so the toboggan was, it was really, and I thank you for the question, because I'd forgotten about it. But that's what flashed in my mind when you said that. And the worst gift, and I hesitate to even answer this. It just seems so mean. But somebody, and I don't know.
Jeannie's clearly nicer than us. I'm like, yeah. My fucking grandma.
Well, I don't even remember who gave me this, to be honest. It's just, I was more stunned than anything else, because it was just such a unapplicable gift. Yes, but somebody somewhere a number of years ago gave me a gift certificate for a car wash. Yeah. And I am legally blind. I've never driven. I don't own a car.
Oh, wow.
Man, I thought that was a bad gift from the get-go.
when you said, you know, a gift from somebody that shows clearly they really don't know you, and yeah, you don't have to be around me long enough to know that, you know, if nothing else, I'll tell you, I can't see that, whatever you're talking about, I can't see it, and this is why. So you don't have to be around me a long time. And so whoever this person was, like I said, I can't remember who it was, but whoever it was, if they know me well enough to buy me a Christmas present, well enough to know that I have nothing. I guess I could go, you know, to the gift shop at the car wash and, you know, buy them a
get some real good air freshener, some hang in your kitchen. Who doesn't like the smell of cardboard pine in their kitchen?
Hey. Yeah, or dried up pina colada. That was always
good. Crusty pina colada. Yeah, okay, you win. And I also think there's a certain age.
I hope that whoever did give me that present doesn't hear this podcast.
I also think there's a certain age that parents should stop buying you underwear.
My parents never did.
Mine didn't either.
Oh, I got underwear.
There's a certain point that you're like, Mom, don't.
Oh my God, I totally got my 15-year-old underwear this year.
15 is not that age. It's like, no, it's like once they hit college, you don't get to, you don't buy them underwear unless they say, "Mom, I really need underwear." Like, don't buy your kids underwear. I just remember
to do, like, you know, we always got to open one present on Christmas Eve.
You mean pajamas? Like, why does everyone say one present? Like, you get to open your pajamas on Christmas.
That big one in the back. That big one in the back. And my mom's always like, "Here, how about this one instead?" Like, no, the big one.
Stop pretending it's a surprise. Just say, "Open your pajamas." And don't stop wrapping it. Like, we all know what it is.
Right. Well, why don't you pick one present that's this one here? Like, I don't want that one. Pajamas. I want the big one.
The only reason you got to open the pajamas is I didn't want you looking all raggedy the next day in your sleep shirt.
Yep.
Faded and worn out in the Christmas pictures.
I get it. But let's just stop with the pretending that you get to open one present and say, "No, you're getting fucking pajamas for on Christmas Eve." Yeah.
Can I
and
just that's all you're tell getting. You guys
no.
that
nope.
I, nope. Okay, let me just tell you.
You don't.
The only girl, and I'm the youngest, and me and Jeremiah are like 7 years apart. So when I was young, he wanted like nothing to do with my nonsense. So I would stay up and he knew Santa wasn't coming until somebody fell asleep. He told me that if I didn't fall asleep, the elves would come and poke my eyeballs out with the points on their shoes.
Nice.
Right. I don't think it exactly had the outcome he was looking for. I was like, like, why do you think their shoes are so pointy? Because they have bells on them.
What made you think that they're pointy because of bells?
Well, I don't know. They had to have some kind of little curl so the bells could hang off. How did that track
in your head? No, I don't.
Those come off. Those come off, poke your eyeballs out, shut them, and go to sleep.
Damn.
Ah, siblings. I know. Yeah. We could do a whole episode on, like, the worst thing you ever told your sibling.
I just said nothing. That's a lie. I ate all of Tom's candy out of his Jeremiah's candy out of his advent calendar 1 year and blamed it on Tom. I know. I was like, yeah, but Tom must have done it.
Wow, you're kind of an asshole. Yeah.
I know.
What's everyone obsessed with this week?
Christmas.
Don't pick Christmas. I'm just kidding. You can pick Christmas. My sister's visiting. I'm stoked to have her here. We're having a good time. This is the first time my sister and I have like hung out in probably 5 years without any of our parents around. And we're in our 30s. We're not like 15. Like it's yeah, but normally when we get together, because we don't live in the same state and haven't for a long time, it's because the whole family gets together. So it's nice to spend time with her without any supervision.
Any chaperones?
Please. We're getting real old. We're driving a truck today talking about heartburn medication. Yeah.
I was just saying today how it's real rough that like we have the 31st and the first off, but have to go to work on the second. Like, excuse me, for those of us who have 2-day hangovers, now, yeah. I can't be expected to return to work on the second.
Yeah.
32. Yeah.
You get hung over. Yeah.
Check for that.
Stacey, what do you Christmas? Just Christmas in general. Well, yeah.
I have kids.
Yeah.
Christmas is everything. Oh, but these little shits, let me tell you. This year, my daughter has set an alarm for 5 a.m. So they come into my room. Bro. It's still super dark outside. And they come in and they're like, "Mom, Dad, it's Christmas. Wake up." And I like sat up and I said, "Yeah, we're not getting up till 7. You can go back to your room." I'm like, I can't believe we never had to like set ground rules before, but that happened this year.
Now
that
ground rule alarm.
Yep, no alarms.
That is so funny.
Lincoln's only 6 months old, so like every present he got, everyone was like, "Oh, look, Lincoln, you got this toy." He's like, "I'm gonna eat all the paper." He's just like shoving wrapping paper in his mouth. And I'm like, "Oh, well, yeah, it's not, he's not impressed with your nonsense." Like, he's like, bah, 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 bah.
Okay, I don't know if this is gonna make me sound like a
Stop.
It's gonna make me sound like a bit of a spinster, but
honey,
like,
anyone that listens to this knows exactly who you are, like, fundamentally, okay, as a person. So
I'm in an abusive relationship with Christmas where, like, I just love it so much. But then, like, the last few years I've spent it, like, alone, which I'm not trying to, like, whatever, don't feel sorry for me. Like, I went to my grandma's on Christmas Day in the evening. It was lovely. But, like, Christmas Eve and, like, the earlier part of Christmas, like, I didn't have any plans and I was just, like, at home alone. But watching Piper open her presents was so funny that it totally made my day. Because she's like a puppy. She doesn't know how anything works. And I like wrapped her presents in tissue paper so she could get them open. And that was great because she also kept trying to open like other presents I had under my tree that did not belong to her. So I was like, FYI, anybody that's got a present under here.
You mean she didn't read the tags like a good one?
Like it's got a giant hole in the wrapping
paper. The audacity of this dog.
She might have a giant hole in it. She's trying to open presents. But like, I have to send you these videos of her like opening presents because she does this sassy little walk where she shakes her hips when she walks away, and she can't. I'm giving her a present clearly, like it's for you. Open it. She can like halfway open and look at me, and then grab it in her mouth, and then like run away and shake her hips. She wasn't supposed to have it. It was just so funny. She was so pumped about every single toy, like everyone she opened. She loved shredding the tissue paper. It was like it made my day. It was the cutest thing. I got her a new little pack of like squeaky tennis balls because her mouth is too small for regular tennis balls, and she just had them in the little pack like walking around like, you want me to open that? Or no, just like, oh,
I'm making a new rule: any guy that you start dating has to listen to the last 20 episodes. I'm not gonna say like all of them because that's a lot of time invested, but like our most recent 20 episodes, and if he's still like, yeah, I'm fucking on board, like you should marry him immediately.
This is why I'm gonna be a spinster.
Like immediately you should lock that down. If he's
have two separate Instagram posts, one that says Piper's first Christmas Eve and one that says Piper's first Christmas. They're different.
Jeannie, what are you obsessed with this week? I'm serious. This is a thing now. Like, this is a rule. Like,
I like Jackie's idea. Any guy past the definitely. Third date, if he hangs out past the third date.
Also, she got like six new toys, and I just like to point out she's playing with my scrunchie right now. So,
money. So there you go. That's the way kids are too. Oh, gosh, that was funny. Okay, what am I obsessed with? First of all, I have to start out with saying that our family, we don't have Christmas on Christmas Day for a variety of reasons that I won't bore you with. But so we had our Christmas on Sunday. So by Christmas Eve, I was done. And that's true every year. We don't ever have Christmas on Christmas Day. And so my Christmas days are so peaceful because everybody I know is busy. The phone doesn't ring. Nobody needs anything. Nobody wants anything. So I was obsessed this week, the first part of the week, with a trilogy that I started reading on Saturday. And I just read all day Christmas. The first couple days of this week, I was obsessed with this trilogy. It's called The Secret Trilogy, and it is lesbian fiction, and it's by a woman named Francine St. Marie. So if anybody wants to do that, I just was so hooked. And so that's the first part of the week I was obsessed with that. And then the second part of the week, I need to be obsessed with my work in progress and get some writing done on it. So that's my obsession for the next 4 days. So.
How's everybody's drinks? Mine's good. I knew it'd be good. I cheated. I drank it earlier today. Stacey, how's your screw top wine?
It's real sweet. It's a little syrupy. I'm getting through it, but I personally wouldn't buy it again. If a Syrah is your thing, it's probably good.
You're such a team player. Just power through that.
I know.
Finish the bottle.
Mine is so good.
We had no idea.
Such a heavy pour, and I have this giant glass, and I filled it like halfway.
Is that the glass I gave you for Christmas?
No, this is a different one. This one's
how dare you? How dare you?
It was dirty because I used it last night.
Acceptable if response.
I got the cutest unicorn wine glass. It's so adorable. I don't know if I've mentioned that I liked unicorns. So to all the men listening, if you're into that sort of thing.
No, the only guy that listens to this is married to Stacey.
Oh, no, he stopped halfway through. I'm sorry. I'm supportive and I love you, but I can't do this anymore.
Oh, well, then I don't have any need to defend Kai anymore on the podcast.
Mine is so good. I will say, like, solid red wine. So I've got, like, a sweet buzz going on right now. But it's so smooth. And I don't know if you have the same experience with your... It's not like the normal Ménage à Trois. It's got that, like, it's the, what I say, lavish or something. Oh. Really smooth, like, no aftertaste. It's delightful, and I'll probably have more tonight.
You're kidding.
No.
The bottle's not
gone yet? I know. I could have sworn the bottle was gone.
I know.
Piper's running around with it in the other room, so as soon as she gets it back from
probably
her.
Guys, this dog is a nut. I don't know if it's the Maltese in her. My poodle was not like this.
We're gonna have to talk about this later if we're out of time. Jeannie, how's your drink?
My drink is a little on the cool side, which is the problem with drinking hot drinks, but it is still very good, even is closer to chocolate milk, so it's very good.
Do you want to tell everybody how they can find you if they don't already follow you in your books and stuff?
You can find me and information about my books at my website. It's just jeannielevig.com, www.jeannielevig.com. And there will always be updates on all of my books that have been released, and I'll be updating the page soon about my current work in progress that will be out in 2019. And then you can find me on Facebook just under Jeannie Levig or under Jeannie Levig Books. If you don't want to wade through pictures of my kids and grandkids and dog and, you know, all that stuff, then hook up with Jeannie Levig Books, because that's only about my books. But you can also friend me on Facebook just under Jeannie Levig if you want to see all those other things. And also on Twitter, and it's just at Jeannie Levig. On Twitter is my Twitter handle. And I think that's it. My books can be ordered anywhere. I am a Bold Strokes Books author, and so Bold Strokes has their own web store. And so you can get my books there. You can get them through Bella Distribution Center. You can get them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pretty much anywhere where books are sold. And I think that's it.
Well, thank you for coming on and talking to us. We really appreciate it on this busy week.
Well, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. I enjoy it. And I really do enjoy it. I listen to you guys weekly, so I really do enjoy it.
Well, we'll try to bring more news back next week.
Yeah.
Yes, less politics.
Well, yeah, because then I'll be out of the loop.
Don't worry, there's no loop because the government's shut down.
That's right.
Merry Christmas, one and all.
Didn't you hear that he gave the, I can't, all right, we're out of time.
We're out of time.
All right, everybody, thanks. We hope you all had a Merry Christmas, and we will talk to you next week. So yeah. Until then, I'm Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacey, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacey, the political princess.
And I'm Jeannie Levig, author at Bold Strokes Books.
Do you want to add anything, Stacey? Here's your last chance. You have 20 seconds. Say whatever you want.
I love you, America.
Okay. Goodbye.